recognizing the unsung heroes of sports media.
I'm stuck in this pit, working for less than slave wages, working on my day off.
This is the Producers Podcast.
I'm a producer.
Oh, you the executive producer.
With your host, Dimitri Ravenos. And it starts now.
Let me just start week three of the show with a big thank you and tip of the hat to the city of Houston, not the least of which Adam Sager, producer of the Sean Salisbury show on Sports Talk 790 out there. He was our guest last week and really took it upon himself to pimp and promote his episode, which why wouldn't you? I hope more producers do that. But as a result, I got all these nice emails from the city of Houston, emails, Twitter DMs, you name it. People reached out all kinds of ways to thank me for recognizing their town and their town's sports community. So that was very nice. Today, we are going to, not the other side, but the other end of the country. We're going from the bottom to the top, as now we are headed to Seattle to talk to Jessamyn McIntyre. Appropriate that we are going from one extreme of the country to the other to talk to Jessamyn, because she went from one extreme to the other for this job. She was in Bristol, producing radio at the network level at ESPN when she decided to move across the country and help launch ESPN 710 10 years ago out there in Seattle. And in that time, she has held all kinds of different positions and really helped shape the sound of a number of different hosts on that station. Most recently, Jessamyn learned that she was going to be moving from afternoons to mornings as that station just shuffled its entire lineup. So again, familiar surroundings, but a new challenge. Something that Jessamyn has gotten very used to up in the Pacific Northwest. She is also the sideline reporter for Washington State football, and I could not help but start there with her this week. So sit back, relax. I will obviously be back at the end with a little thought to wrap up the show. Thanks so much for listening to the Barrett Sports Media Producers Podcast. As a college football fanatic, I am enamored with the idea of you being Washington State sideline reporter, specifically because I want to know what the strangest thing Mike Leach has ever taught you is.
Oh, man. Did you say taught me?
Taught you, yeah. Like something you didn't know before. Some fun fact he shared with you.
Don't eat fat burger at 3 a.m. That is one that I received that as advice. I received unsolicited.
That one paints a very specific picture.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. Well, he taught me to always wear shoes or running shoes, comfortable shoes on the sideline because he's going to run. He is not going to stand still for your interview because he's dying to get back in that locker room at halftime. So he told me a couple stories about how before there was everything was wireless. Like he laments the fact that I actually have a wireless microphone because he used to dart in between his linemen to try to get the wires all caught around his players. And that it was, if it was a woman wearing heels, he would try to get them stuck in the ground.
He is an odd man, but that is a huge part of his charm, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm blessed to cover him, honestly.
For sure. Yeah, if you are going to cover a program in that remote part of a state, in a remote part of the country, that is what you want to keep the job interesting, for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's talk a little bit about what took you out to Seattle, because you were working at ESPN Corporate, and I would imagine a lot of people that work at ESPN Corporate at some point think that they are going to be there their whole career. When did that start to change for you?
Yeah, I mean, I lucked out. I was only 22 when I started talking to them. I was just out of college, and I got hired within a year after graduating. So it was pretty, I don't know, I don't think that happens quite a bit, but I didn't know that at the time because, you know, most people don't start at the corporate level. So I kind of envisioned, I mean, it's very hard. You do a lot of churning at the bottom of the barrel when you enter any company at the corporate level without outside experience. So it started to be just a little bit more clear that it was going to be difficult for me to advance within after a couple years, you know, just kind of seeing what happened when there were jobs open ahead of me. A lot of people would apply from outside the company, people who had 5 years of producing experience, you know. So I guess I never really thought I would seek leaving. I wouldn't just go ahead and say, you know, like, oh, I wasn't actively searching, I should say, when I was recruited out. But it was at the point that I was offered a job in another market, an actual local market, that I realized that there were some choices that I'd have to make.
Interesting. And so what was it about, I mean, was it just sort of the romantic nature of Seattle that made you say this is the one, or was there something about this specific company and job?
Oh my gosh, no, not romantic. I knew nothing about Seattle. I knew that there was a Sleepless movie made out there and that it rained, and that was it.
Right.
I knew nothing about the city. I was pleasantly surprised to find out that there were number 13 market in the country, so that was alluring to me, that they had, they had two of the major four sports out here. They had just lost the Sonics when I eventually moved out here.
Ideal time to be moving to Seattle for a career in sports.
Oof.
And they've just lost a team.
Yeah, exactly. But the reason that I was able, you know, the top talent at our company was the former play-by-play for the Seattle Sonics, and it was Kevin Calabro. So that he was my host. He was one of three hosts that we were hiring at the time. So anyway, I was also allured by the company itself. When I told people at the network and was asking advice when I was going to leave, a lot of it was, don't go local, are you crazy? Because, you know, you're pretty solid when you're at the corporate level.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what level you're at, I mean, unless you're up really high, that's when it starts to get dangerous, but nobody's complaining about being really high in the company. So I had a pretty solid job, and I could have been a lifer there, probably gone into management of some sort or something. But then the idea of working with local teams and coming out here, and then when I was told about Bonneville, you know, people were warning me against doing this. I was, oh, it's Bonneville. Oh, you know what? That's a really good company. You'll be okay.
Disregard.
It was kind of crazy because I didn't know the majority owners in the radio business at the time, just because I worked at the network. You know, I was young and I hadn't experienced it that much, but everyone told me what a great company Bonneville is.
Yeah, that's all I've ever heard about Bonneville as well. So you've worked with a lot of different hosts and shows in your time with 710. Coming from the network, were there things that you did not realize were part of an everyday or of a local producer's everyday job that were kind of a struggle for you to get on board with at first?
Yes, because I had national headlines to cherry pick from when I was at
right.
the network. And, you know, you had, you know, just a plethora of things that your hosts, when you're producing, might be interested in. And, you know, the cardinal rule is you don't want to be talking about something on your show that your hosts aren't interested in.
Mm-hmm.
So when you come out here and, you know, we got here and we launched in April, and there's no basketball, there's no NHL. The Mariner season is just starting, and you've got one game to talk about every
right.
day. What happened today? That was very challenging for me, coming up with content. I think I focused nationally a little bit out of habit when I first got out here, and I had a host who had never done talk radio. He's
oh, wow.
brilliant on the radio, but had never done a talk show. He had been a guest on them before, but hosting, and he was solo too. So it was a lot. It was very difficult, but it got easier as I went along, too. It just only got better throughout time.
So what was your strategy when you're doing this? Because in addition to it's April, you've just launched this station, you've got one Mariner day to talk about. I mean, this was around the time that the Mariner season began in April and they were mathematically eliminated by May. So what is your what's your strategy at that point? I mean, you can't lean hard into how bad is it going to get, I would imagine.
No, but we do have partnerships as well, and that does help us. I mean, that was actually another reason why I felt comfortable coming here is because we're the flagship of the Mariners and the Seahawks.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some people, it can be a double-edged sword because when things aren't going poorly or are going poorly, you know, you're not in the position to completely bash your partners, but you have to
right.
be honest and you have to be critical. And that was an interesting learning experience for me because I was guiding someone else through it while also going through it. But our partnerships really do help. You know, you can go to the team. You can find interesting things that you might not know on a surface level about them, about their players, about their coaches, interesting things coming up. We were fortunate enough where Ken Griffey Jr. had just returned to the city at that time. So there was a lot to work with there. You know, a new GM. It wasn't necessarily all of a sudden, how much worse is this going to get? That wasn't the storyline right away. But otherwise, trying to make our own content was something that we eventually strived towards. You know, I can only remember this one specific thing off the top of my head, and it was a couple years later, but it was when Griffey just decided to retire in the middle of the season and drive cross-country to Florida, just left. And I found out that there was one other person who had done that in his career, not in the same style, but had retired in the middle of the season. It was Mike Schmidt.
Mm-hmm.
So I tracked him down. I call myself a professional stalker.
It's one of the various strategies that makes you an elite producer, I think.
Yeah. I'm like, this is why I'm single.
You can be creative, or you could be like teetering on the edge of psychopathy, right?
Right, exactly. But anyway, so I tracked down Mike Schmidt. I ended up finding some, I don't know how. It was just, by the time I got his information, I'm like, this, just so you know, this is on the internet. you should know that. So I tried to get him on the show as a guest, and he said he wasn't interested in doing that, but he was very willing to email. If I emailed him questions, he'd write me back, and he'd answer them honestly. And he did, and he was very frank about things. It was not, you know, just, oh, that's Ken, or yeah, it's tough sometimes. He was like, wow, I didn't know this and that, and wow, that's crazy. I wonder, you know, this is good, this is bad. Anyway, it was one of those times where I handed it to Kevin, and I said, here you go, you know, here's your content. And it was like I turned a corner with him. I remember him giving me a very, very big compliment for that, and then it encouraged me to do things more along those lines where, you know, if there's nothing there, you know, there's always something there, I guess you
right.
could say. Sometimes you just have to create it.
So when you start in Seattle, you are working with Calabro, who is, like you said, has never done a talk show before, obviously knows the NBA inside and out. NBA is not in town anymore. Since you went on to work with John Clayton, you also have Brock Huard at the station, like a big football presence. What is the process of being a producer for a show like that, for a personality like that, and sort of making sure they can talk, whether it's baseball? I know the Sounders have a big following up there, college football, whatever. What is the process of making sure that when they go on and this is the topic, they are not going to sound lost?
I have to be the expert. I always kind of thought of myself as, you know, like you play that game with a balloon when you're a kid. Don't let it touch the floor. The floor is lava.
Right.
On the last line of defense, and the balloon can never hit the floor. So that's kind of the way I go. And, you know, it's different with everybody. If you have, you know, a top national talent, you know, at any of the networks, they're not going to need that kind of support.
Right.
You know, but in this situation, you're talking about guys who have expertise in a particular field that, you know, it might take away from their ability to have become an expert in the others. So I try to do my best over preparing, writing notes. I basically, right now with Afternoon Drive, a lot of my prep is done in the morning where I tell guys my opinion to draw out theirs. Because if I say, you know, I think that Rashad Penny should give way to CJ ProSize, which I don't agree with, I'm just giving you an example.
Yeah.
And then so you're either going to agree with me or you're not. And then these guys, you know, they develop an opinion because of that. So none of my hosts have ever gone into a show extremely unprepared. I can say that. You know, they've watched the games, even though they're not experts. My job is not to have them sound like an expert. It's to have them sound like they have a very informed opinion.
So I'm ending every show by asking producers the same two questions. The first one is, what do you think you want to do next?
Ooh, that's a great question, because I wear many, many hats.
Right.
Well,
that's got to be, I'm guessing, and this is no shade at your PD, but that's got to be in part because Salk wears so many hats at the company himself, right?
We've all had to do something. We've all had to do many, many things here because we started as nothing.
Right.
And so over time, you know, a lot of our growth has, you know, come within. You know, Salk, yep, PD and host. Brock is a host, and he does now Fox, but he was with ESPN television, mm-hmm. and now he's with Fox. Their producer, Kyle, is our assistant program director, and he's their producer. You know, the boy Howdy, who works on the morning show, is our imaging director, but also a voice on that show. Lydia Cruz, who runs their board, she hosts our 6 to 7 a.m. show, The Blitz, but then she runs that board as well. John Clayton does John Clayton things all the time. And then, you know, I am the executive producer of this station. I'm a sideline reporter for the Cougs. I'm a television sideline reporter for our professional rugby team here in town. I do the radio scoreboard updates for the Seahawks broadcasts. And I freelance in anything else that people need me to do. And I just, you know, I think that since we started so small, everybody says yes to every opportunity.
Right.
So that's what I'd like to continue doing, is growing my on-air resume while, you know, still having a heavy hand in what we're doing here at the station.
And then finally, what is the aspect of your job, of your duties, that you wish your hosts and your PD understood better?
Oh, as a producer, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I would probably say, when people ask me what I do, there's so much that I can't describe when it comes to maintaining the emotional temperature of a show.
Right.
And also, I am proud of my instincts when it comes for what belongs on the air and what doesn't. You know, are my hosts building a straw man? Are they being unfair here? Are they being not critical enough here? And I kind of, stupid line from my Big Fat Greek Wedding, but like, if they're the head, I'm the neck. And I can, you know, let's just make sure we're putting this thing in the right direction. But it's really hard to describe that. And so the majority of what I'm doing in show is making sure that they're keeping, you know, they're not getting themselves in trouble,
mm-hmm.
that they're actually stating their opinions, they're going in the right direction. And I do spend a lot of energy on that, but I don't think anyone really knows it, because you don't put that on a resume.
Right. Yeah, that's funny. You do not, under duties, put staff psychologist on there at all.
Right, exactly. That is, yes.
Definitely want to thank Jessamyn for her time. That conversation was a lot of fun. But I want to end on sort of where Jessamyn and I ended. I want to talk about that idea of the producer being something of the staff psychologist, particularly when you're dealing with a team of hosts. Because Jessamyn's right, there is a matter of keeping everybody in line and keeping the show rolling that you have to do. And you're going to hear later on in this series, I talk with people that sort of realize they have to know how to read their host from day to day to figure out how they're going to go about approaching their job that day. And there is some element of being the guy that protects the star's feelings to a producer's job, guy or gal, obviously. Look, that's fair, because your host's on-air performance does affect the way people think about your performance. But because of that, obviously it can't always be bending to the will or giving pats on the back to the host. There is a weird element to the staff psychologist role, as I put it, of a producer, which is pats on the back, everything is puppy dogs and rainbows, and also you gotta be able to drop the hammer and have the iron fist when necessary. There is a lot of relationship building that goes in with a host, so that the guy that knows he can turn to you to unleash all of his problems, to be a sympathetic ear, will also listen to you when you say, look, man, it's time to get your shit together, because I can't have your poor performance affecting mine just because, I don't know, you got cut off in traffic today, or the coffee that you went to get from the pot was colder than you realized. Whatever the case may be, there is a fine line to walk. And obviously, I can't tell you exactly what that is, because it's going to depend on the personality of the host or hosts that you are dealing with. But there's a fine line to walk of, I am your guy, I'm your right-hand man to the host, and also, this is my show too, and you need to do as good of a job for me as I am willing to do for you. That's where we will end things today. Again, big thank you to Jessamyn McIntyre, and congratulations congratulations to her and everyone at ESPN 710 in Seattle as they sort of have shuffled that brand's lineup a bit, and everybody seems to be in a new position over there these days. I will talk to you next week on another edition of the BSM Producers Podcast.
You don't want to believe it, but baby, the show is over.
Thank you for listening to the Producers Podcast. To connect with Dimitri, follow him on Twitter at Dimitri Ravanos. And for the latest sports media news, visit our website, VeritSportsMedia.com.